Welcome to the Dharma Spring.
This morning, when I first read this statement, this teaching, this koan, we're koaning it. It was the first time I'd said it out loud, which is often the case. I don't usually, when I'm looking around at the koan material, I don't say it out loud. Just read it, then send it off in an email. So it was interesting to, as I read it that first time, I just had this feeling of, and this kind of excitement bubbled up in this delight, really. And not that I understand what he's saying, but there was just something about him saying it and something that connected with in me that just brought forth that feeling. And it reminded me, it's the same feeling I had the decades ago when I first started getting into this practice and would read these things that didn't make sense. They were baffling, and I'm like, what? But something, they hit me on some level, on, you know, in some way that just, well, intrigued me enough to keep going and keep practicing. That's, here I am still, yeah? So it was nice to find, that's still here. Not taking these teachings and this practice for granted, and still being able to have that excitement of the first encounters alive and well. Drawing me in. Kind of like after many years of a relationship, discovering you're still very much in love. Yeah. So I'll come back around to the statement here in a moment, but a little bit about Changsha, since we're moving into another ancestor territory, a new ancestor, not new, but, you know, a new round of ancestor meeting. Not a lot to say about Changsha because not a lot is known about him, other than he was a student of Nanjuan's. And at some point he was, you know, given transmission, told by Nanjuan, you're done here. You can go wandering now. You know, after many years of practicing with Nanjuan, go wander around. And the idea, the practice then was you'd go wander on pilgrimage, meet others, refine your teaching, work it out in the world, you know, let the world work it out more within you and all that. And then you might settle down and found a temple, something like that, and settle down and teach there for a time, maybe the rest of your life. Well, he did wander, and in the province of Hunan, founded a temple, a Lushan or Luyan temple. I saw two different names for it. But he didn't stay there. He continued to wander throughout the district of Changsha, which was a district within the province of Hunan. Another account says he wandered throughout China. So either way, he just kept wandering. He had a temple he could return to, but he didn't stay there. And so, you know how teachers take on the name of the place where they're at, sometimes by a mountain. All the Shans, the Daishans, the Dongshan, or something mountain that they settled at. Or we have Zhaozhou, who settled in the town of Zhaozhou and took on the name. Well, Changsha has the name of an entire district, which just shows that he wandered around that whole territory. And it's said that he taught in accordance with the situations as they arose. So he wasn't going out setting forth any doctrine. Situations arose and he responded, which reminiscent of the Buddha himself. And because as we understand it, the Buddha didn't sit down and intend to set forth any doctrine. He just wandered about with his retinue or settled down in places here and there. People came with questions, and he responded to their questions. And those encounters were remembered and passed down orally and eventually written down and became the sutras, all of that. But all of it was just somebody asking a question and the Buddha responding. So Changsha carries that spirit a bit, yeah? It's also said his teaching was direct and intense, and, you know, getting right to the point, those kind of things. So he got a nickname after one encounter that had some of that directness and intensity, which happens to be an encounter with our dear friend Yangshan, who we just spent a good stretch of time with. So here's the encounter. Changsha and Yangshan were enjoying the moon. Yangshan said, "Everyone is completely endowed with this, but they are unable to make use of it." Changsha said, "I invite you to use it now." Yangshan asked, "How would you use it?" dodges that. "I invite you to use it." Well, how would you use it? Maybe that's how Yangshan is using it, by asking that question. Changsha knocked Yangshan down with a shove to the chest, then stepped on him. Yangshan said, "Whoa, just like a tiger." From this time forward, Changsha was known to us all as the tiger, or Tiger Chen. His his full name, Changsha Jingchen. So Tiger Chen became his nickname because of that ferocity, jumping forth, standing on Yangshan. That's how he used it, yeah. So yeah, that's about all we know about Changsha. Student of Nanzhuan, wandered around Changsha, the district teaching, had founded a temple, and seems like that's where he was when this statement came forward, speaking to the assembly. So let me put it forth again. Changsha entered the hall and addressed the assembly. "I say to you that all worlds pervading the 10 directions are the true monk's eye. All worlds pervading the 10 directions are the true monk's complete body. Pervading all worlds in the 10 directions is your own brilliant light. All worlds in the 10 directions are within your own light. And throughout all worlds in the 10 directions, there is not a being that is not you. This is what I've taught you when I've said that all the Buddhas, Dharmas, and sentient beings of the three worlds are the great light of wisdom. But even before this light was propagated, what is the place where you existed? Before this light was propagated, before Buddhas and before sentient beings, from where did the mountains, rivers, and the great earth come forth?" So as I said at the beginning, I'm not sure what he's talking about. I can't say, "Oh, well, this is it." You know, can't put that head, those thoughts upon it. I just do what we do is, well, this is what comes up for me. And in that, maybe I'm touching into something that he's talking about because it's what's coming up within me. And so you notice what comes up for you. And well, that's what he's talking about, whether it's clarity or confusion or excitement and intrigue. Anything else? Yeah. So the thing I notice my mind doing, and I left this as it was in the book, but part of me wanted to switch it around to make it more accessible and more direct to us. When he talks about the true monk's eye and the true monk's body, complete body. Of course, he's talking to all these monks, but it's really the practitioner, the student. It's each of us. It's all of you. Yeah. So I was going to change that, but I left it as it was. And so then there's a curiosity that I notice when I hear those words, the true monk's eye. Do I experience that as somebody else, or do I know it's me? Yeah. You can notice that for yourself. When you hear a statement that seems to be referring to the true monk, the something else out there, does it really stay out there, or do you find that it's you and you understand as a connect with something about you? And then I noticed I wanted to switch the order of the words. My mind wanted to, I wanted to make it, instead of the true monk's eye, as opposed to the false monk's eye, which also has its virtue, a sincere practitioner versus just a rice bag, as they were called, people who just come in here to get rice to be fed and taken care of in the temple. Yeah. But I've reversed the order, changed the order up. The monk's true eye, the monk's true body, you know, your body of reality, the true body of yourself, your true eye. Yeah. Then I had another rendition that arose. You know, all worlds pervading the 10 directions are truly the monk's eye and are truly the monk's complete body, or are truly your eye and truly your body. So I guess for me, the experience was, though the words and the intellectual reading of it, the logical reading of it, puts it out there as somebody else, my experience of it wanted to bring it closer, make it me, more so. So that playing with those words is that process of making it more intimate and real and alive and mine, right? And then he switches to that with the next little bit, you know. He drops the true monks and makes it clear he's talking about you. He's talking about each person in that assembly. He's talking about us all. Pervading all worlds in the 10 directions is your own brilliant light. All worlds in the 10 directions are within your own light. I like that experience of at once there's the light that you are shining forth within a field, within a realm. And that realm itself is the light. So the light is pouring forth within itself. And that's like, what, huh? It's kind of like being held by your own experience. You're having the experience, and the experience is also holding you while you're having it. So what came to mind for me with that in association was, at the time, I unknowingly or unintentionally ended up renewing my vows. It just kind of sparked and started happening in the middle of a retreat. I had an experience in my meditation where I was sitting, you know, with this mudra, the cosmic mudra, thumbs together, little circle there, oval, sitting in my lap. And in my meditation, there I was holding the posture, holding the mudra. And I had the experience that I, a little bitty me, was sitting within my own hands. There was an Andrew sitting in those hands in my lap. I really felt sense of it, not just an idea. Came out of nowhere. At the same time, I had a feeling that I was sitting in some huge hands that were holding me, just as I was. So I had this body here holding a little body of me within it and being held by a huge body that I'm not sure if it was me or not, but that would be the logical conclusion. And just like with this phrase, nothing to really sort out there and pin down, just to notice the experience of that. And that's when the resonance of what he says connects with me. Something that I know, not intellectually, but know through experience, know through, or is a part of me, part of my story, my journey. And having had that experience, I think it engenders the feeling of, as I said, being held by my own experience as I go through life all this time. It's kind of like that thing of the observer and the observed not being two things happening at once. There's awareness, then there's something that is aware, holding the space of awareness, allowing the awareness to be there. And a rabbit hole to go down, trying to figure out who's who and what's what. But if I don't try to go down and figure it out and I just rest in that, I can have that like non-localized self experience in the midst of it all. Yeah. Let's see. Yeah, so your light is pervading all the 10 directions. And all the 10 directions are held within your light. No inside, no outside, perhaps. So you might notice, what does it resonate? What resonates with you about that? Or doesn't, you know? Whatever your experience is. Yeah. And then this, and throughout all the worlds in the 10 directions, there is not a being that is not you. One of the most puzzling things of these teachings in this tradition is how we're all connected. We are all one, so to speak. And here it is. There's not a being out there that isn't me. I found it interesting that he's saying this to an assembly full of people, talking to each one individually, saying, everybody around you is you. And look how many of you there are. Yeah. So I imagine myself there in the assembly, looking over, looking around, going, that's me, you're me. And at once he's saying, yes, it's you, focusing it on me. But simultaneously saying, and it's all spread out, it's everybody. So where is this you? Where is this me? How could that be? Yeah. Another thing that if I try to work it out intellectually, my brain will start to hurt. Yet there's something that resonates about it. And this called forth another experience from many years ago, of the brain hurting kind. I was driving probably up to school, I don't know, up somewhere, driving up I-25 through Denver. Maybe it was a day that there was a Broncos game or just traffic, but there was, I remember being up on this slightly elevated spot and just stuck in traffic, and there was this stream of red lights just extending off into the distance, all these cars. And there in the midst of it, I'm pondering, how are we all one? How am I one with all of these cars and all of these people spread out before me? It didn't make sense. How could that be? How could that be? I noticed the question wasn't, am I really one with all these people? It was, how can this be? So part of me understood or had a connection that, yes, there is something here that's accurate or true about saying such things, but how could it be so? And couldn't work it out. Couldn't make sense of it intellectually to satisfy myself. It was baffling. And like, it doesn't make any sense at all. How could it be? How could it be? And I don't know that I've ever answered that question and made it, been able to say, oh, this is how. And that's, I believe, a good thing. I just notice over time with this practice and just life experiences going through the things I go through, the charge of the question or the solidity of that doubt has softened, opened up, become more porous. I still can't say how it is, but there's not as much doubt that it is. And I don't need to pin it down and solidify it, because I think if I did that, I would solidify a me and solidify a separation. So it's more of, again, let me just have these experiences and let them work on me and not try to say, oh, I get it. That would be the booby prize. As Steve Milligan said, understanding is the booby prize. No, nothing to understand there. But something in my experience finds that it's undeniably yes. And that's enough. Because I notice I don't need to operate out of an understanding. I'm already operating out of experience that perhaps understands more than I do. And allows me to keep moving further and further into this all me territory, yeah? He does something I didn't really catch at first, but I was catching on to it when I was breaking down the pieces. Changsha does something here that's sneaky. after saying on all these 10 directions, all the world of the 10 directions, there's not a being that isn't you, that isn't me. He seems to take a slightly different direction when he says, this is what I've taught you when I've said that all the Buddhas, Dharmas, and sentient beings of the three worlds are the great light of wisdom. What he's sneakily saying is, you are all the Buddhas and Dharmas and sentient beings of the three worlds. Yeah? And the great light of wisdom, well, that's you too. And me, and all beings, all Dharmas, all Buddhas. So I like that he snuck it in there. I thought he was focusing on that light of wisdom, but he's really saying, and don't forget, you are Buddhas, Dharmas, all sentient beings. Kind of following the pattern he's been laying out there. That thing of here's the vast and here's the particular, and they are not two. The vast light holding the particular light that's shining within it. Not two. Yeah. And then we come along to what's more of, it's like maybe he's priming us. All these other things are priming us to, okay, resonate with this, hang out with this, work with this other stuff about everything is you and you are everything and the simultaneity of the vast and the particular there together. Okay, and then he says, from that place, settle in there. I have a couple of questions. Even before this light was propagated, spread around, what is the place where you existed? So a couple of interesting things about this question. One is, what is the place where you existed? Not what was the place where you existed. When I was copying this to paste into the email, Google highlighted a blue line under the is, wanting me to change it to was. So Google knew, this doesn't make sense. But Changsha, he put it forth this way, what is the place where you existed? So that's one interesting thing about the question. The other interesting thing is he doesn't say, before the light was propagated, what gave birth to the light? That's where my head kind of thought he wants me to know, well, where did this light come from? But instead he says, where did you exist? Where do you existed? Where is it that you existed? Is that two different questions? He talks about the light being you up above. So is this really two different questions? Or if you can find the place where it is that you existed, maybe you'll also find the birth of the light. So just questions upon questions here, things to ponder and be curious about, like my mind and myself are already. And then furthermore, before this light was propagated, before Buddhas and before sentient beings, from where did the mountains, rivers, and the great earth come forth? It's like, oh, seems to be moving away from me and my existence, is going into the great vast earth. But then I go back above, well, throughout the 10 directions, everything is my complete body, right? And it's all within my true eye. But where did these come forth from all this time before that happened? Yeah. And these are good questions just to have as questions and companions for the journey of wondering, inquiring, and being curious. I don't find myself inclined to answer. I find myself inclined to keep looking and wondering, noticing what I notice. Again, not looking for the booby prize of, aha! There's something about that. Here's this question about what was before, what was when you existed before this and here and now, all that kind of stuff. The what was and the what is, again, becomes not to, like that experience of the vastness of what has always been and what was from who knows when, and the isness of that very thing here and now in my life, in your life. Look into it. Don't worry about time and the divisions of before and now and past and present. Just look into this here now. Is it anywhere else? Yeah. But holding that and meeting it like that, or having it meet me like that, I found yet another experience from the past, which I'm not worried about, but it's the past coming to mind, something I hadn't thought about in a while. But I used to often contemplate this thing. Where did it all start from? Where is the beginning of this, of me, of everything? And interestingly, an image would come to mind in response that I couldn't make sense of. I just know this is what came to mind. And it was like looking into a dark black tunnel that wasn't really a tunnel. It's just, it's so dark black. And it seemed like a tunnel because there's something there in the far distance. I don't know if it was a tunnel or not. I just know that there's darkness all around. And then in the distance, there was this light. And it was a mixture of red and blue. It seemed very far away. And that's what arose in response. This red-blue light somewhere, maybe far in the distance behind me or in front of me, but far away from me. And it was lively. It wasn't just it seemed like it was moving. Those lights playing together, or that one light playing together with two different colors. And I just let that be, you know, thinking, well, maybe someday I'll get closer to that and be in the midst of it and understand it. But just to have that experience was enough to notice, well, somewhere way out there, there's this red-blue light that's live, alive, and lively. So having that come up today in the meditation with this koan, and wondering about it, grateful for its coming back for another visit. I had that experience of, oh yeah, I haven't had any kind of, I reached it. I understand what it is now. Whenever I think of it, it still seems very far off in the distance like that, right? And what came to mind was that, I think one thing would be that I'm going to walk down that tunnel and get there and be able to grab a hold of those little lights, because they seem very small from my vantage point. But today it was like, oh no, it might be like these images we get from the Hubble telescope, and those where we see these things that are small groups of light very far off in the distance, but when we get there, they are galaxies. They are not small at all. They're vast, and we'll be in the midst of them, and we won't reach anything specific as they looked at from the distance, because we'll be there fully in the midst of it. Yeah. And then what companioned that in my experience and thinking was how when it's a foggy day, and mostly when I'm up at my dad and stepmom's house because they're up on a hill and they get more fog up there than we do. They just had some yesterday. But when there's lots of fog and mist around, you look out in the distance and you see it. And you notice that here, closer to you, there isn't any fog and mist. But that's actually not true. You're in the midst of the fog and mist as you look out and see the fog and mist out there, right? It's just because of perspective and distance and all that stuff that happens, I can't see how it's collected and gathered here around me too. It's too minute, right? But I'm there soaking in the midst of it. And I thought, well, maybe that's how it is with that red, blue light thing I saw. It's gathered together and collected there, and it seems more like a solid thing out there, but perhaps I'm soaking in it right now. Whatever that red, blue light is, yeah? And perhaps all this time, I've just been journeying along in the midst of it, through it, within the galaxy of it, yeah? So then I get to ask from that place and not answer, but wonder and wander and be curious. What is this place before I existed? What is it? Yeah, what is this place where I existed? And where does and do the mountains, rivers, and the great earth come forth as I'm here in the midst of the mist, diffuse and yet not, permeating everything, a part of everything?
Thank you for listening. For more about Andrew Palmer and his teachings, please visit bowandroar.com and look for him on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.